Welcome to What Are We Talking About Today, the podcast where we literally talk about everything. I'm your host, Gigi. Let's jump into it. Hello, everybody, and welcome to What Are We Talking About Today. And on today's episode, we're going to be talking about some of my favorite scary movies since it is October and we're getting closer and closer to Halloween. It's just a few movies, I want to say maybe like five that we're talking about today. Probably seen all of them except one. I don't even know how many people even heard of one of them. Because usually when I mention it, people are like, you pull this out your ass, it's not real. But it is. So hopefully you go out and watch all of them just to get in this spooky feeling. And when you get done listening, please leave a comment and tell me your favorite scary movies. And if you agree that some of the ones I said are, you know, pretty good ones, and the one that I probably feel like no one's ever heard of, if you watch it, please tell me if you like it. I mean, I feel like it might not be for everybody, but it's just one of them. You got to be like, you know what? I gave it a chance. I actually really liked it. It's not kind of the same storyline or scary movie type as every other one. So, yeah. But for the first movie I chose, it is The Conjuring 2, and it is starring Vera Farmiga as Lorraine Warren and Patrick Wilson as Ed Warren, and it also has Madison Wolf, and she plays Janet Hodgson, and she is the girl who, you know, is getting possessed by the ghost. She's the main one that is feeling the wrath of, what's the demon thing? Valak. Okay. It's set in 1977, so if you don't really like movies that are, like, back in the day or something, then I don't know. Because I have a friend who, it don't matter, I mean, this movie could come out, like, today. If it's, like, it looks old or whatever, she don't really watch it. I don't know what her deal is. To each his own. Each his own. Okay. But this one is set in 1977, Enfield, London, England, and it's in a house with a single mother, and she has four children, two boys and two girls. They kind of have a little rough life going on. Mom's kind of struggling and stuff financially. And, you know, she's already gone through the divorce, or she is fully divorced at this point. I can't remember. But so she has no help from the father. And, you know, she kind of thinks her child, Janet, is acting out and she's lying and making stuff up just, you know, out of emotion because her, you know, father's no longer there. That's not the case. Turns out that there is a ghost actually, you know, in the house doing these things. You know, things start out kind of small, like, okay, I take that back. This should not start out small. This dude, the ghost is already like talking to these folks like in their ear. I don't consider that small. I feel like if you're going to haunt me, you move a cup, that's small. If you let me hear you playing this day in my ear, bitch, I'm going to shit on myself if we get out the fucking house. But anyway, you know, Janet kind of wakes up in the middle of the night. Like, she's, like, sleepwalking, well, sleep teleporting, and, you know, she doesn't know where she is. The ghost of this dude named Bill Wickens is, like, speaking through her and stuff like that. And one night, you know, the girls share a room, bed starts shaking, doing some weird shit, the girls are screaming. The mom comes in, you know, and she's like, what the hell's going on? And they're talking about, oh, there's someone in the room, it's a guy in the room, the guy bites Janet, and the mom sees his teeth mark, and then the mom finds a makeshift Ouija board that Janet and one of her friends made at school. So her mom is just like, y'all have been scaring each other, this shit's not real. Next thing you know, like, I think it's the dresser moves clear across the damn room, and so they get the kids, and they go across street to their neighbor's house. Okay, so the guy, neighbor, calls the cops. Cops are going to investigate because, you know, they're like, somebody's playing a prank on you. There's no way that, you know, your house is haunted. While the police are there, they kind of hear banging and stuff, so they think it's a rat. They pull up a chair to, like, listen in the wall to see if it's a rat in there. Next thing you know, the chair that they moved, like, goes back to the table and pushes, like, in the, like, under the table, like, you know, you would do after dinner. Police file a report. It becomes a big old deal. You know, Then the news catches wind of it, so they kind of do like a interview. Well, that gets, you know, that picks up wind, and it gets to, I forget what his name is, but anyway, he is like a father of a Catholic church, and he works with Ed Lorraine Warren. Anyway, so the father lets them listen to like this recording of Janet, but it sounds like a man. So they were like, this family needs help, but we really don't believe it, because they're basically calling it the Amityville Horror of England, right? Because it's, you know, on TV and it's getting a lot of publicity. And, you know, the Catholic Church doesn't want to be involved with stuff that's like a hoax. So they send Ed and Lorraine to good old England. And, you know, they kind of set up and try to figure out what's going on. I mean, this shit is taking place during Christmas. Not to be funny, but I'd be like, look, y'all, I'm not flying to England like 2 or 3 days before damn Christmas. Y'all gonna have to wait. I mean, I'm pretty sure there's like investigators over there, but whatever. The investigators that were there, they're apparently not getting the evidence that the church needs, because they're just not. I don't know. I guess they're not capable of it, or they don't have a psychic that can help them. Whatever. So the Warrens go over there, you know, to meet the family. Lorraine basically can't even like sense that there's a spirit there. She's like, I don't know what's going on. She's like, I don't see anyone. I don't hear anyone. I don't feel nothing. I just sense their own fear. And that's as far as it goes. You know, they try to catch their evidence and stuff, but nothing's really concrete until like one incident. And then it's basically like, they're like, this is a hoax. Mom makes them leave. Okay, as soon as they leave, I don't know what the hell. I guess the Lord spoke to Ed and was like, listen to these tapes. They listened to them and they were like, you know, okay, we got to go back because now we understand what's going on. While they're on the train, Lorraine was like, oh, I know what's going on now. Like, it was a blockage because of this, this, and this. Okay, so they go back. They do it, girl possessed. Ed and Lorraine got to do what they got to do to save the family. Because, I mean, I really could break down this whole thing and tell you from the beginning to the end. Because I've seen this movie so much. But I'm not going to tell you in case you haven't seen it. I'm not going to tell you what happens, like, for real. But I just feel like it's the best Conjuring movie out of the three. You know, the first one was with the Perrin family, and it was pretty good. That third one, The Devil Made Me Do It, I liked it. But, I mean, first of all, I'm not even getting to the Conjuring 3 because that, anyway, we're talking about the second one. So the second one is my favorite. I just really like it. It kind of brings full circle, Valak, which is the nun demon that, you know, which is the whole nun movie. And I think we see her in the first Conjuring. I can't remember. But anyway, we figure out what the hell it is. We can figure out why Lorraine was like trapped up in her room for like 8 days without eating and drinking and not talking to anybody. So everything comes full circle in this one, basically. It's a really good movie. I really like it. And you know, if you haven't seen it, you should see it. It's pretty scary in my opinion. But I mean, I watch all the time. I'm to the point now I can just go to sleep watching them because I've seen it so many times. But when I first saw it, I probably had trouble sleeping. But yeah, give it a watch. Let me know if this one is one of the better Conjuring movies. If not, I mean, just give me your opinion. It's not going to hurt my feelings if you say that the third one is better than this one. It is what it is. So let's go ahead and get into the next movie. Okay, so we have the 2001 version of 13 Ghosts starring Matthew Lillard, who plays Dennis Rafkin, and Tony Shalhoub, who plays Arthur Kritikos. Basically, we start in a junkyard. Just right off the bat, you're just in a junkyard, you see a bunch of fucked up cars, it's whatever. But we see two people, Dennis and a guy named Cyrus. Cyrus is like this weird old man. He's like collecting ghosts. I don't fucking know why. I mean, I know why, but like at this point, we really don't know why he's collecting it or collecting them. But he's hired Dennis to collect 12 spirits. They are at spot number 12 for the 12th ghost.
Dennis is like a psychic that can touch you and read your whole life. And I mean, he can like see your past, present, future, all that shit. And while they're, I guess, kind of like going at it about like the spirit, because he was like, oh, I thought you said you don't kill this many people, but he's killed like all these people. There's like a bunch of spirits there. And so that's what they're talking about. So while that's going on, we see a bunch of people in some type of gear. To me, it looks like SWAT team gear with a hazmat suit on top of it. But they're setting up this big clear-ass cube and a bunch of speakers everywhere and just different devices to get this this ghost to come get in the cube. I mean, you know, like he's really going to try to come get in the cube, but he is. That's what they think. So after, you know, we see kind of the setup, there's a lady being dragged over named Kalina, and she's like fussing at them like, oh yeah, you don't need to be doing this. It's wrong. You can't be capturing spirits. You know, you need to let them be free, you know, blah, blah, blah. You can't do it this way because you don't have the spells to even capture them anyway. So she's like, bitch, I got this. Fuck off. I don't even need you here. Like, you stressing me out type shit. So then they start playing a spell over the loudspeakers. Don't ask me what the fuck they were saying or talking about on that bitch, but it was working because here comes the fucking ghost. He is hashing, slashing, doing all kind of shit to these folks. Like, they're flying up in the fucking air. Blood is spewing. He ends up killing damn near every fucking body, even Cyrus. So you're basically just left with Kalina crying over, I don't know if that's her boyfriend or her friend, but it was somebody that was with her and she crying over him. And Dennis, that's all who's left. Then it pans over to the opening credits, and we kind of meet the Criticos family. It's like two kids. It's a nice little family. The mom and dad, they're watching the kids play in the backyard real lovingly. You know, talking about, I can't wait to grow up, blah, 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 stuff like that. Then in the background, while they're panning to like family photos, you can hear like, there's basically a fire. It ravages the house. The mom gets trapped in the house, and then she later dies of the injury she sustained at the hospital. So, you know, they lost their house, so they're kind of living, the dad and the two kids are living in, like, a little rinky-dink apartment, and they have a nanny. So, you know, you can tell, like, after the fire, like, everybody in that house is just kind of, their spirits are really down, you know, they don't know, like, I don't want to say where the next meal is coming from, but you could tell, like, they're really struggling financially, and it's taking a toll on everybody there. So they get a knock at the door, and it's a lawyer, and he explains who you know who he is and who he worked for, and it turns out he worked for their estranged Uncle Cyrus, who had a, you know, a good little decent amount of money. Well, they say he squandered the family fortune, but apparently, you know, he didn't, what we find out. But he left them a house, his estate. And, you know, the lawyer's like, you know, come by, see it tonight. It's a couple hours away. When you get there, you can sign the papers and everything is getting turned over to you. So I'm going to say this now. The lawyer said their uncle liked his privacy. Tell me why, when I get to the house, it's a glass motherfucking house. A glass house. How you like privacy when I can see all through your house? I don't care if it's in the woods, away from anybody. Talking about there's no neighbors. But it's still the fact that you in the middle of fucking nowhere with not blinds, no curtains. Just a glass house with all the damn lights on so I can see it straight to the fucking back. Like, whatever. So anyway, since all the power is on, it is draining literally everything in the city. So there's an electrician outside. Like, y'all gotta let me in here because thousands of people ain't got power because y'all over here draining it in this big ass box house. First of all, the design of the house is fucking ugly. You know what? I just hate the house. I don't know who the architect was, but that shit was so ugly. Like, I know Cyrus probably made that shit and designed it. I would never let that man even pick out a couch. I'm gonna let you know that now. It's so bad. So anyway, they let the electrician in, and the electrician is Dennis. But, you know, like, the lawyer's kind of looking at him like, do I know you? But I guess he can't put two and two together. So anyway, so Dennis runs off to the basement. We don't see him no more. We see the family kind of walk through the house looking like he got a bunch of weird shit in here. Like, your uncle was kind of odd. Like, why are there scribbles on the wall? Why aren't they even fucking walls? Why are they just a piece of glass? Whatever. So Arthur, the dad, is like, y'all just hang out here. Let me go in here and handle this business. Arthur basically tells Laura, like, hey, look, the property tax on this shit alone is something I cannot afford. So, like, I can sell this bitch or something, but I can't be in charge of it. Laura tells him, like, hey, look, your uncle was, like, you know, an eccentric man. Like, he made his money by traveling and selling and buying, doing whatever, doing weird shit. So, you don't have to worry about money. Everything is taken care of. Y'all are set for life, basically. So, while the Laura's explaining all this shit to Arthur, Dennis is downstairs. Basically, like, I don't want to say, like, freaking out, but he is just real confused as to what the fuck Cyrus was doing, because, like, he put on these damn things like safety goggles, and he could see the ghost. And they're all trapped behind these, and obviously glass, because everything's glass, but trapped in these little boxes. And there's just a bunch of them down there. And I don't know what, like, his thing is. I don't know. I guess he just feels them. And, like, it, like, pains him or some shit. Like, I don't know. Because he kind of has, like, these moments where, like, you'll think his, like, fucking back just broke. So, the way he acts. So, anyway, Dennis runs upstairs and he's like, yo, Arthur, don't sign them papers, bro. You and your family got to get the fuck out of here. Because you got ghosts downstairs. And everybody's like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, you supposed to be fixing a breaker. And he tells them, like, hey, I worked with your uncle, like, we collected ghosts together. And the lawyer's like, bruh, he crazy, don't listen to him, like, people warn me about him, blah blah blah. Okay, then all of a sudden this man starts having a seizure. Dennis has this seizure, right? Arthur's trying to help him. The lawyer's like, fuck this shit. So the lawyer goes downstairs to collect his bag of money. And when I told you it's a bag of money, it is a bag of money, which I wish I could find some fucking where. But yeah, so when he lifts up his money, little does he know, he unleashes the damn spirits. First of all, this dude is a dickhead, because on his way down to get his money, like, he's basically, like, talking shit to the ghost. Like, he has his own little special goggles, so, he can see them. And when he, when he releases the ghost, like, you know, they start coming after dude, so, you know, he's trying to run, whatever, ends up dying. But now the family's stuck in there, because when he lifted up his bag, it also, like, had this little mechanism where it was like damn metal shutters, like, enclosed the damn house. So now it looks like a big ass metal cube in the middle of fucking nowhere. So they're fucked. So they're all in the house, they're just confused at what the fuck is going on. Basically, the kids are MIA because no one knows where the fuck. First of all, the little boy on a scooter. Let me tell you, I couldn't stand that motherfucker. I'm glad I didn't really have to deal with him that much. I kind of was like, oh, shit, if he dies, damn. Well, anyway, on to the next one, right? Like, whatever. Because he was annoying as fuck. Like, if you've seen this movie, you know he is annoying. And whatever. I just don't like him. But yeah, the kids are kind of missing. They're like, what the fuck is going on? Like, we need to find the family. We need to get the fuck out of here. Like, how? First of all, how do we even get out? That's the thing. So, you know, they're looking and the ghosts kind of start attacking them. And they can't really see them at first because, you know, they don't have the little glasses. So, anyway, they kind of eventually acquire some and then they can see them. So, then they can kind of start dodging them because you can't fight these things. Like, once you see the type of ghost... Yeah, there's no fighting them. There's really no fighting them at all. So, and then here comes Kalina out of nowhere with a spell book and some flares and some other stuff. So, I mean, she's real cool. So then she basically breaks down to Dennis and Arthur and the Danny, like, hey, look, there's 12 of these things in here. They're here to power a machine. And with the machine, you can see past, present, and future. Like, you have all this knowledge, and basically whoever is running the machine has unlimited knowledge, so they can run the world. And she explains what the 12 ghosts are, and then Dennis remembers, like, hey, someone said something about like a 13th ghost, like you're missing one. And Clint is like, no, the 13th ghost is basically just a spirit that has to, like, that's going to end it. Like, that's going to break the machine and reverse everything that's going on. And she basically told him, like, hey, it's not really even a spirit. Like, it's like a live sacrifice. So it's not like someone's already dead. So it was like, hey, I don't know who 13, you know, like, what's going on. But they were like, yeah, Arthur, you're a 13 ghost. And he's like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, because I'm not sacrificing myself for nothing. But they were like, you're going to have to if you're going to get your kids back, basically. But yeah, it's good. I think, you know, you should watch it. I really like it. I mean, I really started, like, I think the first time, the only reason I watched it was because it was on TV. And then I was like, oh, okay, it's a good little movie. But then again, I do have a crush on Matthew Lillard because he did play Stu in Scream. And, you know, he was kind of, you know, he's a little psycho. He's a cutie. He was cute then. He's still cute now. But yeah, that's the only reason why, like, I even watched it. Really was because of him, but it is a good movie. I mean, if you like ghost stories, it's not like the rest of them. So it's not like in a haunted house or, okay, I take that back. It is an haunted house, but the only reason the house is haunted is because Cyrus brought them there. So it's not like they died in the house or whatever, you know. Cyrus has, like, I don't know, fuck him. Just bring restless spirits there. Let them be restless wherever they were. They were enjoying themselves, but whatever. But I do know that if you do want to watch it, it is on HBO Max. And I know usually in October, AMC plays it like 1,000 times. And I have already seen it once on AMC while flipping the channel. So you could probably just check your listing and it will be on there. Let's get to the next one. Next, we have Annabelle Comes Home, starring McKenna Grace as Judy Warren, Madison Eastman as Mary Ellen. Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga reprise their roles as Ed and Lorraine Warren, but the roles are very minor. It's at the beginning and the end. So if that's who you're coming to see, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. So, shit. Just watch the fucking movie, because I would say watch the beginning and skip to the end, but it's good, so just watch it. But if you know anything about Annabelle, she is like a porcelain doll with a white dress with a red ribbon around her waist. And she's not even like a little girl. It's a demon. The demon disguises itself as a kid and con its way into the lives of these nurses, basically telling like the medium that they hired that, hey, I'm a little girl. I died here and I think these chicks are cool and I wanna post up with them, like, you know. I want to live rent-free in their apartment. And, yeah, so basically the girls were like, yeah, cool, we'll let her stay. And once you know, they said that, the demon was like, shit, it's time to go, like, what's up? So, yeah, that's why they called the Warrens, because shit was getting out of hand. Like, ghost was, demon, whatever it is, was, like, writing notes, knocking on the wall, moving from the room, basically, like, attacking folks in their sleep, like, I'm not having them, but, like, you know, in the movie, like, in the original Annabelle, like, the first one they had, and even, like, I think at the beginning of The Conjuring, the first one, they were talking about how, like, they were, like, sleep and having dreams, you know, and it was, like, Annabelle, like, attacking them, and they wake up, and they would have, like, scratch marks and shit like that. So, basically, they were, like, get this fucking doll out of my, like, house. So, the Warrens were, like, yeah, shit, like, we'll take her. Off bat, like, Annabelle was like, fuck this shit, y'all, like, pissed me off because you're moving me to a different home, and I was damn near about to possess these bitches, so I'ma fuck with you on the way home. When I tell you, like, this girl, Annabelle, him, her, whatever the demon is, I don't know what it identifies as, but just the demon was like, I'ma fix this shit, so makes the car stop, like, in the middle of nowhere next to a cemetery. You know, Lorraine can see the spirit, so Annabelle's basically, like, conjuring up these ghosts, like, y'all come over here with me, we fuck some shit up. Lorraine can see all of them, basically just standing around the car. And then, I mean, Annabelle basically almost got, it's like, smacked by an 18-wheeler. So, yeah, so they were like, this,
this doll is dangerous as shit. Like, we really need to lock it up. And it can't just be, like, in our museum at the house. Like, it really has to be locked in a cage. So, excuse me, they lock it up. And, like, get it blessed. And, you know, they're like, cool, she good. First of all, I don't know why you got all that shit in your house. I don't care. If you want to try to protect it from people, I would have just got a whole different building or storage unit or something. I don't know. Like, but just the fact that it's in the house, and I forgot how often the Warren said that they actually got their house blessed, especially that room. But it's still, I couldn't sleep with that. And then you got a little girl. Ooh, that's the thing. I was like, you got a little girl. And you, one, first of all, you don't expect her to go down there. Two, why you want that near your child? Why? Come on, Warrens. Think. Anyway, and then we meet Judy. And we find out that, you know, she's kind of a loner, you know? She really don't have no friends. And that's mainly because of what her parents do. And other parents don't want their kids hanging out with them. And we find that out because a couple of kids are like, hey, I can't go to your birthday party because my parents don't like what your parents do. They don't like that they hunt and ghost. And, I mean, I feel like she kind of, on her own, is sort of a reason she might not have friends. Because she kind of, like, she can see stuff, too. Like, her mama, like, she can see the ghost. So, I guess, like, she kind of has, like, weird moments where she zones out. Because we kind of see that, where she's kind of looking at this one older ghost, and it's just weird. So I guess you know how kids are, like, okay, I'm trying to talk to you, but you're staring off into space, you're weird, I'm good on that. So anyway, her baby sister Mary Ellen was like, you know what, since you ain't got no friends and your birthday's probably not going to be real good, I might have like a little thing for you tonight at home, just me and you. Okay. So at home, they're making a nice little birthday cake. There's a couple knocks on a door. Mary Ellen go answer the door, and it's a little girl in a white dress with a red ribbon around her waist. And for people who did not catch the fucking reference of the outfit, that is Annabelle in a human form. You know, Mary Ellen's like, can I help you? And the girl outside is like, can I, like, you know, play with Annabelle? She's like, you know, Annabelle here, what you talking about? The girl's like, she right behind you. Yes, she is. And Mary Ellen turns around. No one's there. And then she turns back to the door. The girl's gone. So it's whatever. Okay. Go back to making the cake. Next thing you know, boom, her friend Daniela shows up out of nowhere. They're like, how you get in the house? What Daniela talking about? I just came through the back door because it was unlocked. Like, that's just a normal, everyday thing. Like, I guess that's how the 70s were. I guess you just walked in people's houses because they didn't answer the front door. So I'm just going around back, see if it's open, then walk in. Like, whatever. I don't like Danielle anyway, because first of all, she invited herself over. Because while Mary Ellen was at the store, Danielle was like, why you didn't tell me what the Warrens did? And, you know, whatever. And she's like, well, I'm coming over anyway. Girl. Why? Anyway. So she's there. She basically she coming over because she want to be nosy. That's all it is. So she brings Judy some skates. So Judy and Mary Ellen go, you know, up the block, you know, playing or whatever. Leave Danielle in the house. Danielle is a nosy ass little heifer. She going through the Warren stuff, looking for keys because she wants to get into the, basement with all the stuff. Now, why she really needed to go to the basement, I don't know. I mean, because I know she tried to, like, you know, talk to her dad and all this stuff, but what I didn't understand is why she needed to go to the basement and do that. Like, that, like, I don't know what she thought she was going to find in the basement to help her, but whatever. So she finds some keys, she gets in, she's touching everything and whatever. Like, she's just doing shit you're not supposed to touch nothing, and she's touching everything, literally everything. So that means even Annabelle. So anyway, she unleashes some shit, don't even know. There is a game. If y'all just, first of all, I hope y'all just pay close attention when you watch this, because there's like Easter eggs in this thing that a lot of people probably didn't even notice. But I really think probably the easiest one is the game they're going to play. And first of all, I wouldn't play it because you got to stick your hand in it. And I just don't want to stick my hand in something I can't see because I would think there's like a spider living in there and I don't care. So anyway, they get their pizza. They're all chilling, eat the birthday cake. You know, Judy sees Annabelle kind of just hanging out throughout the house. And she's, you know, I mean, she can see things, so whatever. It's just a lot of shit going on. It's all Danielle's fault because she's a nosy bitch. She's the reason why things are going to go south. But yeah, there's a cute little moment in there. I mean, it's a couple cute moments because there's this guy that, you know, they call Bob. Bob's got balls. And he comes out there to sing a little song with his guitar to Mary Ellen. I just think that's the cutest little thing in the world because, you know, romantic or whatever. I wish somebody would come sing me a song, but, you know, only dudes that I know with musical anything are rappers, and then they rap about things that aren't romantic at all. So anyway, so basically what happens is after the whole Bob thing, Danielle is like, well, I'm about to bounce, you know. Well, she wanted to stay, but Mary was like, no, you gotta go. So she's like, okay, I'm leaving. But then she realized, she's like, oh shit, I forgot to return the keys, so I gotta go back in the house. Once again, breaking and entering. Just going, whatever. So basically all kind of shit is happening all because Daniela. But yeah, I mean, you just gotta watch it because I feel like I'm just keep talking about this movie and I'm gonna tell you everything that's happened and how it ends. So this is the best Annabelle movie because the other ones weren't that great. I mean, the first one's okay because you kind of get the history or whatever, but the Annabelle creation, I don't know. I ain't like that one. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't the best because this is obviously the best one. So give it a watch if you haven't seen it, because I know a lot of people who have seen all the Conjuring movies, but they haven't seen the ones that are kind of outside of just the Conjuring. Like, you know, they haven't seen The Nun or any of the Annabelles and stuff like that. So yeah, give this a watch, please. Okay, now we have Carrie from 1976 starring Sissy Spacek as Carrie White, William Catt as Tommy Ross, John Travolta as Billy Nolan, Amy Allen as Sue Snell, and Nancy Allen as Chris Hargensen. I think that's how you say her last name. Anyway, so basically Carrie White is a senior in high school, about 17. She's kind of an outcast, a loner. But it's really her family's fault. Like, her parents are real religious, and her dad, I don't know if he died or he, like, left them, but her mom is, like, a religious, like, fanatic, you know? I mean, this lady literally says, like, sin is, like, the black raven or something, and then the first sin is intercourse. Like, I don't know. But basically, like, you know, dealing with her mom and all the shit, you know, Carrie's basically antisocial. Like, she doesn't have any friends. Everyone knows that Carrie's mom is crazy. So, you know, they kind of feel bad for her because they're like, well, your mom is, like, weird. But then Carrie's just weird. And you know how teens are. Like, if you're weird, then you're just weird and no one really wants to deal with you. And it kind of upsets people because she's socially awkward and she doesn't really know things, like, at all. Because at the beginning of the movie, they're in gym, and then, like, you know, they go and take the shower, and, you know, Miss Carrie gets her first taste of womanhood in the shower and is freaking out because she doesn't know what it is. Like, her mom never told her, and so, you know, she's, like, begging these people to help her, and they're just laughing at her. And being teen bitches, they're just throwing, like, you know, pads and tampons at this poor girl. And she's not understanding what the fuck's going on. Like, she's begging for help. So, the gym teacher comes in there. And she's like, what the fuck is going on, y'all? Like, the hell, you know, like, what the fuck are you doing to her? And basically, you know, they tell her. And so, she, you know, kind of wraps Carrie up, and she's like, here, I'm gonna help you, I'm gonna tell you, blah, blah, blah. And all the girls go on about their business.
So basically the gym teacher is telling the principal what's going on. So they send her to the office, you know, because they're going to give her a note to go home, and she's dismissed, you know, for the day to kind of get herself together. And I want to say that's the first time we can see her powers, like, because the guy keeps calling her, I think, Cassie instead of Carrie. And the gym teacher told him like twice her name, and Carrie's even said her name, and he just keeps calling her wrong name. And so, like, you know, when she gets upset, like, her powers kind of come out a little bit. And something breaks. I can't remember, it was light bulb or a cup. I don't remember. But something, like, you know, kind of, like, shatters. And she goes home, and, you know, she's telling her mom about it. She's like, why didn't you tell me this is going to happen? You know, everyone laughed at me. And then that's when her mom is talking about, like, the first sentence. The sentence, Black Raven, some shit like that. And then first sentence in a chorus and shit like that. And then she basically makes Carrie, like, go lock up in a fucking room to, like, pray and whatever. And, you know, as time goes on, Carrie's kind of, like, figuring out her little powers or whatever. And eventually she reads a book that she's, like, telekinetic and all that stuff. And she's not the only one, but, you know, she can't really tell anybody. But later on, the gym teacher, I guess, like, the next day, the gym teacher is like, look, if it was up to me, I wouldn't even let y'all go to prom, and y'all would have, like, 3-day suspension. But the principal was like, no, just give them a week of detention, and they can go to prom. So one girl, she's basically supposed to be, like, the nice girl, but she's really a low-down evil bitch, but whatever. She, Sue Snell, she asked her date, Tommy Ross, to be like, hey, I mean, like, I fucked up, I did this, but I feel bad, so can you just, like, take care of the prom? And Tommy's, like, the real popular dude. I think he plays, like, a sport. I can't remember what he plays, but, you know, he's, like, really attractive. Everybody likes him, you know. He's Mr. Popular, Mr. It, that guy. And then he's kind of like, what the hell? But, you know, he does it anyway because she asked. And first, Carrie kind of says no because, you know, she's never been asked out. And she doesn't have friends anyway. So she's like, no, whatever, no. And then basically she kind of runs off crying. And then the gym teacher, you know, was like, what's wrong? Carrie's like, oh, I got invited to the prom. And, you know. And the teacher's like, just go to prom, you know, it's fun, like, you know, you'll have a good time, it'll be good for you. So when she finds out who's asked her, she basically, like, goes up to the girl and was like, what are you trying to pull? Because, you know, Carrie doesn't need this. Like, if you're trying to, like, make her go with this guy so y'all can embarrass her, it, like, don't do that shit. And then Sue's like, I'm not, she's like, I just feel bad, I want her to have a good time, blah, blah, blah. And so, and then Tommy was like, well, she already said no, so she's not going anyway. And, well, Sue was like, no, you can ask her again, make her want to go. And the teacher was like, look, y'all cannot embarrass her, whatever. And everyone's like, we're not trying to embarrass her, trying to make her feel good. So, basically, Tom shows up to Carrie's house and was like, look, you know, you liked my poem. I'm trying to take you to the prom. Because Carrie keeps asking why, which, I mean, understandable. Because, I mean, you don't really talk to her for real. And, you know, it's kind of random how you Mr. Popular wants to take out the weird girl. But okay. He is begging her to go. She's like, no, you need to leave. I'm not going with you anyway. And he's like, I'm not leaving until you say yes. And she just keeps like, why do you want to, like, take me? And, you know, he's giving these fucking excuses, whatever. So she finally says yes, so he can leave. And, you know, she tells her mom about it. And then her mom was like, oh, they can smell you're a woman now. That's all they want to have sex, blah, blah, blah. You need to go and pray and stuff like that, whatever. Because she didn't even want Carrie to go to prom. She was like, the fuck no. But Carrie was like, I'm going because, you know, I've already accepted the invitation, so I'm going. And I think something shatters, maybe like a light bulb or something. So, you know, she's doing her little research, reading up on it. On her powers and stuff like that. So, then this bitch named Chris, who was, like, super rich. Everyone's, you know, kind of does what she says because she flaunts her money. And that's kind of her power or whatever, you know. And, she hears that Tommy is taking Carrie, and she's like, why the fuck would you do that? Like, that's some bullshit, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, Sue is just like, look, girl, let it go. It's whatever, because Chris isn't going to prom anymore because she refuses to go to detention. I think she only went for like 1 or 2 days and she said, fuck it. Like, she's done. She don't give a fuck. And then her and like the principal or the PE teacher get into it. And so Chris is like, y'all gonna pay, fuck all this, like, I'm done. So she goes and she, you know, meets up with her boyfriend, what's his name, Billy Nolan, that's John Travolta. So Billy Nolan's basically like this, you know, like, supposed to be badass dude, whatever, shit. So Chris is like, look, I hate Carrie White, I'm gonna need you to, like, handle something for me, blah, blah, blah. So basically, Chris, Billy, and a couple of his friends, like, go to a pig farm to collect blood from a poor little piggy so they can dump on Carrie. So they get a bucket full of it and they set it up because here comes, you know, I think prom like a day or two later. One of them, I want to say Billy joins like the little committee or something. I know somebody joins the damn homecoming committee, and the guy in charge was kind of reluctant because they're like, why are you waiting last minute? But they let him do it anyway because they need the help. So basically what happens is, you know, Tommy picks her up and everything's real nice and she's kind of nervous, don't want to go in. Oh, before that, her mom was begging her not to go to this prom. She kept saying, he's not coming, he's not gonna come, they're all gonna laugh at you, you don't need to go. And she was like, if he comes to the door, I'll answer and I'll tell him you're sick and you can't go and stuff like this. So basically, like, she tells her mom to, like, sit down and shut up, and she uses her power to, like, kind of hold her down, and then she basically, like, releases her. And her mom was like, just don't go, I'll tell him. And so she was like, just sit down and shut the hell up, just like, I'll see you later, like, I'm gonna go have fun and you're tripping. So, you know, when Carrie gets to the prom with Tommy, she's, like, reluctant to go in because, I mean, you know, she doesn't really talk to people. She doesn't have friends. And then that bullshit her mom was, like, you know, talking about they're gonna laugh at her or whatever. But, you know, she, you know, hanging out with Tommy's and, you know, Tommy's friends and their dates and stuff, and those girls are really nice to her and everything, and, you know, she's excited to be there. Her and Tommy have a good time. You know, Carrie can't really dance because, you know, so she wasn't really doing it, so everything was fine. But eventually Tommy gets her dance and was teaching her how to do it, and they had a great time, you know, and he actually started liking to be there with her. They even kissed a little bit, and I was like, oh, okay. So I was like, if you're really trying to, like, sell this, you're really selling it. Because at this point, I just feel like if I took you just to make my girlfriend or whoever else happy, I ain't gonna be kissing on you, but whatever. So, but Tommy was starting to feel Carrie, you know, but Tommy's a real nice person anyway. So, you know, kudos on Tommy for letting her enjoy her night, you know. But, you know, because Carrie has to be home. So Tommy was like, look, I'll take you home, I don't mind, you know. He was just like, you have to really be home early. And Carrie's like, I'm sorry that I'm, like, probably ruining your night. And Tommy's like, no, if you have to be home, you have to be home. And he was like, if you want to go to this place before you go home, we can stop by for a little bit, you know. And she's like, I've never been. So, you know, he's really letting her enjoy her night, because this is probably, like, the only night she would ever get as long as she was in the house with her mom, because her mom is crazy. So it comes time to vote for king and queen. And then Carrie's like, who should we vote for? And Tommy says, shit, fuck it, let's vote for ourselves, you know. And Carrie's kind of like, why, you know, whatever. And Tommy's like, fuck it, like, we're probably not going to win anyway because there are only people voting. So why not just do it? Because fuck everybody else. Chris basically pulls some strings for Carrie and Tommy to win. So, you know, they announce, you know, the winners. They go on stage and Carrie's really happy. You know, everyone's applauding her and she feels like she actually starting to belong, you know, because she has made friends and everything. Then all of a sudden, like, just a bucket of blood just pours on her and everyone goes silent. And then, like, no one is really laughing except one of Chris's friends and a couple of Billy's friends are laughing, but that is it. But all Carrie can see is everyone laughing at her, because the only thing she can hear in her head is, they're gonna laugh at you, just hearing her mom repeat that over and over. So she thinks everybody is laughing at her, But then you could see Tommy, he looks up and sees a bucket of blood. And then he's like looking out. He's asking like, what the hell is this? Like, what the fuck is going on? Like, he is so confused. And then the bucket like smacks him in the back of the head and he's unconscious. So like, you know, all of them are laughing. Well, not all of them, just the couple of dickheads that are laughing at her. And Carrie like starts like, you know, with her powers, starts like shutting the doors and locking these folks in. People cannot get out. And she starts taking fire hose and she's like blasting these people with the water. And just like shit, a bunch of shit happens. The fire erupts. Like, it's, you know, things are going up in a blaze real fast. So, you know, but if you haven't seen it, I feel like you should watch it now. Because, I mean, you just really got to see Carrie's powers. And I don't want to tell you what happens at the end if you haven't seen it. I mean, you probably guess. But the first time I saw it, I wasn't expecting the ending. Like, the high school part, like, I kind of figured. But, like, the ending shit kind of, I was like, well, damn. But, yeah, it's a really good movie. I like it better than the one with Chloe Grace, whatever her damn name is. This is what I'm going to say about remakes. I don't mind remakes. I just feel like if you're going to redo it, make it fucking good. That's it. Because a lot of the movies I like are usually the original ones. Like, I'll watch the remake, but depending. Like, on the Halloween, there's too many fucking movies of those. And they have too many Halloween, like, the first one, like... Like, shit, how many times you got to tell me Michael's origin story? So, like, shit like that, I don't care. Like, I'm not trying to see that shit. But, yeah, like, the remake of Carrie, I was just like, why? Like, I get you and do it for a new generation, but at least make that shit good. That's the thing. Because if that's the case, it'll be 2040 and I'll still be watching this shit from 1976. So, but, yeah, watch the original Carrie. It's the best one. It's actually really scary. I really enjoy it. Okay, y'all. So this movie I'm about to tell you is the one I was like, no one's gonna believe me, that it was real, but it is. Trust me, it is. It is called Route 666 or Route 666, depending on where you're from and how you say it. It stars Lou Diamond Phillips as U.S. Marshal Jack LaRocca, Lori Petty, who's from Chattanooga. Shout out to her. Who plays U.S. Marshal Stephanie, and Stephen Williams as Rabbit, the witness. Okay, so basically Rabbit runs away because he's like a federal witness and he ain't no snitch and he don't want a part of what's going on because, you know, he ain't trying to die. Like, that's his biggest thing. He's like, I don't want to go to court because I'm not trying to, you know, like, get shot up. So the marshal is like, yeah, whatever, we got you. We'll protect you, blah, blah, blah. We about to take you back to L.A. for court. Okay, well, here come a bunch of hitmen trying to shoot at him, whatever. So they have to get off the main road. And they see there's like a route called 666. First of all, it's blocked off, so I don't know why the fuck. Why the fuck y'all would go that way? First of all, look at the route name. 666. Why? Then that shit's blocked off. Don't go through there, but whatever. They use marshals. They do what the fuck they want. So they driving down, you know, this dirt road, basically, and it's real deserted. They're sitting there just going along, and on the side, there's, like, a makeshift, like, graveyard, and it has, like, you know, markers there. So LaRocca is like, shit, we're gonna pull over, and I'm gonna look at it. Like, there's something going on, but no one knows what the fuck is going on. So basically, like, him and Stephanie go up, like, just like a little hill, and there's like four graves together, and they all died on the same day. One of them turns out to be his father. As they're about to leave, this other agent named PT walks up, and he's like, you know, like, oh shit, I studied about these dudes in school, blah blah blah, I know everything about them. And he basically starts going in on these four men, you know, like, LaRocca was a bank robber, and then there's the other ones were like murderers and did weird shit. Like, one of them was named Hackman. And he literally, like, cut up his victims in, like, little pieces and shit. And so he's, like, explaining everything about these men.
And then he puts two and two together. He's like, oh shit, LaRocca in the ground is your dad. Okay. So then they get into it. They start fighting, whatever. So while the other agents are like, you know, just sitting, chilling, waiting on them to come back down, one of the hitmen comes and starts shooting at him. Okay. So they're firing back and forth. The hitman gets hit and he's bleeding all over, you know, the ground, like he's bleeding out. Next thing you know, y'all, okay, here, I'm gonna say this now. This is where, when I start telling people about this movie, they don't believe me because it just wait. You kind of see like outline of like these men walking with like weapons. It's like a sledgehammer, a pickaxe, a jackhammer, and this dude walking with chains. And then they kind of disappear and they get closer and like, you can see less and less through them, because when you first see them, you can see like straight through. But as they get closer, they're getting more solid. Okay, well, when they get there, they like, you know, the agents are shooting at them, whatever. And they wind up like getting one of the agents. When I tell y'all, they jackhammer this man to death. Like, they literally, like, first of all, they beat him with like all the weapons, like hit him with the chain, whack him with the pickaxe. I mean, take the sledgehammer to the head, shit like that. Then they just start jackhammering away, like on this man back, bro. And he's just in little pieces at this point. Then they find out, like, you know, they're trying to shoot at him. They're like, what the fuck is going on? Like, we're so confused. Like, what are these things? Because we're shooting at him. Nothing's going to die. Then LaRocca, the dead one, basically attacks his son. And then, like, Steph is like, yo, dude, watch out. Like, this is your dad that's, like, trying to kill you. So it is what it is. They escape and they take off in the cars. And as they're taking off on the cars, they're starting to, like, jackhammer a hole in the ground. Then they jump into it. Y'all, I don't know what ghost, zombie, whatever the fuck this thing is. But they jackhammer a hole into the ground and they just bloop, pop in there, you know, like little rabbits. Okay. So Steph is on there, was like, okay, y'all, we should be good. Like, we just got to call for backup and everything will be fine. But like, we're going to be like 60 miles away from them. Like, they can't catch us because they're on foot and we're in cars. Rabbit is like, I don't know what the fuck you talking about, but these fools just went in the ground. And they're like, what do you mean they went in the ground? He's like, they dug a hole and they went inside the ground. He's like, we can't be on no type of concrete, no asphalt, no nothing, because like, that's where, you know, they're getting prepared. That's where they're coming from. And no one's believing them. You know, they're like, what the fuck ever. Then their tires start to melt out of nowhere. So, you know, they got to pull over because they can't drive, because it's either drive on your rims in the asphalt or your rims in some cactus and a bunch of rocks. So they just pull over and try to just wait for help. So they touch the ground. They're like, it's not even that hot anymore. So they're like, how the fuck the tires melt? And Rabbit is like, dude, I'm telling you, it's them. They're doing it. And so they're like, whatever. So they kind of just walk off into like the desert a little bit to get some shade. So it is like, it's like, I want to say a couple minutes later, Jack is like waking up out of this like fog and he's like in some dude's cave. And the guy's like, you had an accident, you know, it's fate that you're here. That's why you had the accident, blah, blah, blah. He's like, you're the one that's got to like help the spirits get peace and shit. Like, they were waiting on you, something like that. Jack's like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. He drinks some peyote tea and he basically can see like what the hell happened to his dad. And of course, the rest of them. So he goes back to find his group and he's basically trying to like explain it, but no one's like really listening. Cause like, how can you really explain it? It's a long story. So he's just like, let's just get out of here. I'm going to call for backup and we can leave and let this all be over and done with. So basically they have like a face off with the zombies again, the ghost, or what, I don't know, ghost zombies or something. They're a mixture, but you get to find out why these zombie/ghost things are out for revenge. It's actually a really good movie. You just need to watch it. It's just hard to explain what they are. So I just feel like, yeah, if you
if you want to give it a watch, like, I hope I tried to, like, make it interesting. Like, it's really, I promise you, it's a good movie. It really is one of my favorites. I just got finished watching it. I just don't know what the fuck they are. Like, because zombies don't appear and disappear and fade in and out. Like, it's a lot. I mean, if you watch it and you're like, what the fuck is going on? I completely understand. Please just give it a try and let me know if you watched it. I think y'all will like it. Okay, y'all, so this is the last movie. And technically, it's not a movie, but this shit is damn near 14 minutes long. But it's a great, scary video. It's a music video, y'all. And I'm just telling you now, I was fucking terrified. And I'm pretty sure all y'all were terrified when y'all were little and seen it. And that is Michael Jackson's Thriller. Yes, y'all, yes, I was fucking terrified. And I'm going to tell you right now, it took me into the age of 13 years old to watch that video all the way through. And guess what? I did it by myself. Yes, give me a round of applause, y'all. Yes, yes, yes. Okay, let me tell you the damn backstory of the fucking thing. The reason why I'm scared. I'm not going to explain Thriller. Everyone knows what Thriller is. But fun fact, before I explain my terrifying story, you know at the beginning how it's like a movie within, like, the video and whatever, and everyone thinks, you know, it, or, well, he turns into a were-something, everyone's like, oh, it's a werewolf. No, it is a were-panther. Yes, a were-panther, not a werewolf, because I just learned this, like, the other day. The guy who created the whole makeup, mask, outfit, shit, costume for his were-panther was the same guy who just got done filming... Shit, what is it? Werewolf in London? Something like that. Like an American werewolf in London. That shit. So he won like some makeup award for it. Whatever. So he didn't really want to create the same thing. So he just made like a werepanther. I don't know. He gave a whole explanation about the shit, but I forgot. But anyway, yes, it's a werepanther, not a werewolf. Fun fact. Anyway, this is why I'm scared. Or was scared of this video. According to my mother... And before everyone thinks she's a bad mom, she's not. She's not. She's not. I promise you. But according to her, I was a badass child. I do not recall. But to her, I was the spawn of Satan, basically. So to fix my ass, she would pop the fucking VHS in and call me downstairs. Because, like, downstairs, we had, like, a huge TV. We had, like, big old speakers, everything. Like, you know. Home entertainment theater, whatever, that whole nine yard bullshit. So she would call me and be like, hey, come here, you know, my last go down, that shit is on, bitch, let me tell you. It didn't matter what part it is, as long as I seen something of it, I would take off running. Like, no, I refuse to watch it. Like, and even if I wasn't bad and she was just flipping the channels, especially during October and they would play the video all the time, she would just call me in there just to scare me. Like, I'm going to tell you, I didn't watch that video all the way through until the day Michael Jackson passed away because I was that terrified. I was 13. Baby. No, ma'am. Like, that video scared the fuck out of me. Like, I would cry, take off running. Like, I would be shaking. Like, I could not deal. Like, the thing is, I can watch zombie movies. I like those. Like, they're some of my favorite movies. Like, I do not get scared of those. But, I don't know, something about this music video did it. Terrified me. To death. But I made myself watch it that day he passed away. Because, you know, like, VH1 and MTV were playing all his music videos. So, I sat there and watched all of them. And I was like, you know... I think I was watching my granny, and then she left, and then I was like, fuck it, I'm gonna just wait until Thriller comes on, because I'm going to watch it. I am going to watch it. And it came on, I sat there, and it was getting kind of, sun was setting, so, you know, getting kind of dark outside, and I was like, and then I had no light on the room. Why the I was doing it up, because I was like, if I'm gonna watch it, I'm not gonna have no lights on, we're just gonna get through it. I got through it, though. I watch the whole thing, so I'm not terrified. And, like, the thing is, even, like, then, if I just saw clips, like, now, I'll be fine. But, like, when I was little, I couldn't do just, like, you know, any piece of it. Like, if I just walked in the room and seen it, I'll be out. So, you know, I used to, like, basically watch it in pieces as I got older. You know, like, I knew what the video was and parts of it. And, like, I knew how it should go. But I ain't never watched it until the day he passed away. And, I mean, I haven't seen it since because I just see no point in me watching it again. I'm not scared of it. Like, I see clips, you know, on Twitter or something. Like, I'm not going to, like, throw my damn phone and have a seizure. You know, nothing like that. But I don't see when I'm flipping through MTV or anything. I'm not going to play it on YouTube. Like, the song itself never scared me. Like, that wasn't the thing. Like, I could listen to it. Didn't bother me. Even, you know, like, when I was little, like, they would play it. My mom wouldn't, because she's a big Michael Jackson fan. Shit, I did not care about the song. It was just the fucking video. Jesus Lord, when I tell you. I'm sorry, I'm still thinking about that shit. Like, my mom really, why would she do that? Why? I'd rather have, like, spanked me or something. But you're playing a Thriller? Like, just a video just to fit? Oh my God. Oh Lord. But yes, anyway, y'all, let me know if you were scared of it like me. And if you're still scared of it, I'm not going to judge you. It took me 13 years to get over it. But, you know, just let me know. Thank you for listening to What Are We Talking About Today? Please follow and turn on notifications so you know when to upload next. Please share with your friends, family, and those coworkers that you really don't like but think you do.